Golf Smarter number 341, published on July 11, 2012, is brought to you by our new Golf Smarter Switchblade Divot Repair Tool with the removable ball marker. Join the legions of golfers who are becoming Golf Smarter ambassadors. Pick up a Golf Smarter Divot Repair Tool for yourself and your playing partners now at golfsmarter.com.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The Mental Keys to Improve Your Golf with Michael Anthony.
This is Golf Smarter, sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
It's so nice for me to say, welcome back to Golf Smarter, Michael.
Hey, it's good to be back. I tell you, I missed you.
Oh, thank you. Well, you know, and if anybody is not familiar with Michael Anthony's work on the mental keys to improve your golf, Michael, go check out Golf Smarter Tips in iTunes. Michael and I recorded for a full year, and he put out 56 episodes every single week for a full year that I'm telling you, if you went back today and started at his first and went all the way through and all the other tips as well, you are going to be a more efficient golfer. But I pause because I want to say that there's more to it than golf. It's life itself and how you approach things, because Michael's work is so good. And I just am really happy to have you back to take it from ground one and build it back up.
Okay, Fred, thank you for that wonderful introduction. I've been, you know, out there just working away. And I've, you know, since we last talked, I don't know how many more thousands of golfers that I helped lower their score. And it ranges, you know, from guys that are scratch golfers to people that never have broken 100. Matter of fact, if you go to my website, I just put a new testimonial up there. And he says, Michael, he says, I've been playing golf since I've been 18 years old. He says, now I'm 57 years old. He says, I never broke 100 during that period of time.
Wait. This guy's been playing golf for almost 50 years. Let's call it 40 years. And yeah, he's never broken 100?
Never broke 100.
So why did he keep going?
I guess the love of the game, the frustration.
Oh, my God. Well, good for him. And with the work that he did on your stuff?
Well, what he did, he says, I'm honored to tell you that I've shot an 89 today.
Wow.
So he goes from never breaking 100 to an 89. He says, I couldn't believe in my wildest dreams that I could read a book and see those results.
Unbelievable. Well, I'm absolutely convinced. I think that's part of the reason why the name Golf Smarter means more than to me than just the show, that it is a way of approaching the whole game. And that from the very first episode I ever did of Golf Smarter, I had a firm belief, and luckily I've had this substantiated by so many instructors, that if you have a strong mental game and you understand strategy, you're going to lower your scores.
And you can lower your score almost instantly when you understand what you're trying to accomplish with the mental game. And let me kind of clue the audience in.
Let's build this up. Please give us the background of how you approach this.
Well, I'm just going to throw the whole enchilada out there right now. It's very quick. The whole goal of the mental game is to create a mental state that will optimize the chemistry of the brain that will allow you to perform in the zone at your highest level of mechanical proficiency. And the whole key is the chemistry of the brain. Very few people are focusing in on the chemistry of the brain. And it's becoming common knowledge nowadays that, you know, as the chemistry changes, your performance changes. And what people don't realize is that for every thought you have, your thought has two components, facts and emotions. When you play around in golf, you've experienced many, many, many facts. Now,
yes,
the way the brain is set up, it's programmed to repeat its past. And so anytime you had a fact while you were playing, and if you got angry or if you had fear, which are negative emotions, you lower your chemistry, take away from your ability to perform. Now, put this in the context. Imagine the golfer playing around a golf, and he faces water. Water is nothing more than a fact. Now, if he's attached to emotion, oh, my God, I'm going to hit it into the water. Then he lowered his chemistry. He had fear of hitting into the water, and he's going to increase the probability of hitting it into the water. Now, once he hits it into the water, now he's angry with himself because he hit it into the water. Anger is another negative effect. So when he goes to hit his next shot, you know, his chemistry is even lower. And so it's a cycle downward. And people wonder, well, gee, it's such a frustrating game. It's because you're not controlling your emotions. You're letting your emotions control you. And it controls the chemistry, which affects your performance.
Well, I frequently will laugh under my breath when people are like, oh, God, I always hit it in the water here. And so, you know, as he steps up to the ball, he goes, don't hit it in the water. And then, of course, he's thinking too much about it, and he hits it in the water. And I said, you realize that the last three words you said to yourself were hit it in the water, or four words, hit it in the what, five words, hit it in the water. He went, no, I said, don't hit it in the water. I went, I know.
You bring in here the don't and said, hit it into the water. And let me throw out a couple more pieces, you know, Fred.
So, please.
As I mentioned before, the key is to become aware that your emotions affect the chemistry of the brain, which definitely affects your performance. Because in sports, you can't deny that when you're negative, you don't play as well as when you're positive. As a matter of fact, when you're playing at your best, you're not even thinking. It's all in the flow state, you know, all in the zone. Now, the reason it's so hard to change your past programming is that the brain starts working at a very early age. 6 months after conception, your brain starts recording everything that goes on around you while you're in your mother's womb. When you come out into this world, through your entire life, right up to this present conversation we're having that the golfers are listening to, it's being recorded by the brain. And the importance of the recording of the brain is that it's your database. Whenever you go to make a decision of what to do, the brain quickly reviews what you've done in your past, and I call it your tape. Going back in the old days when they had tape recorders, whatever was on that tape is going to be played back. And so if you have a history of seeing water and having fear, that's going to play back. If you hit it in the water and you have a history of being anger, that's going to play it back. And so we're talking about becoming aware of what is on your tape, because your tape has all your positives and all your negatives. And your tape doesn't care what you do. It just wants you to repeat what you've done. Does that make sense, Fred?
To me, it does. It always has. That's why I've enjoyed speaking to you so much.
Yeah, and you sit there, and it's such a simple thing. You can change your performance almost overnight just by merely reducing the amount of negative emotions that you have. And sometimes after a round of golf, if your emotions got a hold of you, you have a chance to review what happened that day. And your brain is sitting there looking at it, and all of a sudden says, hey, you're reviewing what's going on. And so you take a look at all of those shots where you had, you know, fear, or where you had anger, where you had frustrations, where you had doubt, and you talk to yourself, hey, tape, next time I play a round of golf, when I come to the water, I'm not going to think about the outcome. I'm just going to take a couple deep breaths, exhale, hit the ball, and see what happens. Mm-hmm. And the tape is saying, what the heck's he doing? He's telling me how to behave the next time I play? And if you do this over and over and over, what you're doing is you're pre-programming your brain, your tape, because when you go to sleep at night, your brain has to review, what did I do in the morning between waking up and going to sleep? Because while you're sleeping, your brain is readjusting everything you've done in relationship to your past, so it can decide how to behave when you wake up in the morning. So voila, the best time to reprogram and improve your mental game is while you're sleeping. The easy way to change your game is do it just before you go to sleep. Spend 5 minutes and tell your brain how you want to behave. And while you're sleeping, it will be reprogramming itself to respond.
But that requires work. I mean, it's not like you can just do this once and you're going to wake up and everything's better, right? This is an ongoing process?
Sure, because the tape wants to do what you've done in the past. Mm-hmm. Now, you've done that for 3 days in a row, and then you stop for one day, and the brain's, we're going back to the old way. It's going to take you right back to where you were. So if you're not constantly monitoring your thoughts and emotions, there's no way you're going to be able to reprogram the tape, because the tape will take a look at what you've just done and what you've done in the past. And if you've only put 1% of work in the present, it's going to use that 99% of the past to bring you back to where you were. And so there's, you know, I always say, first you work, then you get paid.
Really? Is that the way it's supposed to work?
Yeah. And one of the whole keys is desire. I'll talk about people. I said, hey, if you don't have a strong desire, you're kidding yourself. And they say, oh, I have a desire to lower my score. And I says, fine. Well, how much action are you taking? Duh. You know, it's just a wish. If you have a desire and you're not doing any work or putting in any action, you're just kidding yourself. And most golfers wish they could shoot lower scores, but they really don't have a strong desire. There's, you know, people widen themselves.
And I bet you there are people who are saying, of course I have the desire. I hit 100 balls 3 times a week.
Well, just think of all the opportunity you had to learn. You had 100 different shots to learn. What were my emotions during those 100 shots?
Right, but they're doing it all on the range, and they're all doing it on a physical part. And that's, you know, mostly if they're not even taking lessons, they're just building, if muscle memory is a fact or not, they're just repeating bad habits. If
they're not repeating what's on the tape, because the tape is programmed to have you repeat the past. Yeah. So you got several elements we talked about. Now, one we talked about, you have to have strong desire to make, you know, to do something different. Number two, you have to realize you're programmed to repeat what is on your tape, your past. And number three, all of those facts that are on your tape, if you've attached negative emotions to it, you've lowered your chemistry, taken away from your ability to perform. Now, let's throw another key out there. Mm-hmm. Goals. There are two types of goals. There's the outcome goal, and then there's the process goal. And people say, well, what's the difference? Now, let's make it real simple. If you want to go across the street, that's a desired outcome. So how do you do it? Well, you point yourself in the right direction. You look both ways to make sure there's no traffic. And then you take one step at a time until you make it across the street. So taking one step at a time is the process. Now, guess what? If you don't make those steps, will you ever make it across the street?
Mm-mm.
No. But if you do make those steps, will you make it across the street? Yes. So people say, that's not brain science. I said, well, look. When I work with an athlete, especially I worked with Olympians that went on to win gold and silver medals in the Olympics, where you work with golfers that want to lower their score. And you tell them, okay, first goal is you want to win a gold medal, only one in the world. Okay, you want to be the best golfer in the world. You want to win a tournament. You want to lower your handicap. These are all outcomes. Now, how do you do it? Well, you do it by doing the process. When it comes to golf, first, it's a very highly proficient mechanical skill. You got to take lessons to get the proper mechanics. So you've got to do the mechanics properly. And if you're overweight and out of shape, you know, that's going to take away from your ability to perform. So you got to start getting into physical shape, you know, exercising to bring it down. And then the next thing is strategy. Are you going to take shots that have a low probability or a high probability depending upon your mechanical proficiency? So you got three different things already. And then number four is the mental game. You've got to start reducing, you know, your negative emotions and increasing the positives. Now, those four components are the process. Now, guess what? If you can do the process better than anybody else, who's going to win?
You.
Okay. So why worry about winning or losing?
Right.
All you want to do is put all your attention on focusing on the process. Now, the good thing about this, because you've heard everybody talk about, forget about the outcome, get into the process, but they don't tell you why. Because the whole key is, if you're totally involved in the present, and you're not concerned about the outcome, because you figure, why bother? I'm just worrying about improving, because if I improve, I'm going to win. Now, back in the old days, the samurai warrior days, they were highly skilled in martial arts, and they were trained to perform without concern about living or dying. Because as soon as you start thinking about living or dying, you're worrying about the outcome, you're opening yourself up to the fear of getting hurt, and boom, you know, there goes your performance, you're out the window. Now, golf is not a life and death situation, but look at what's happening right now. And I'm doing YouTubes now. I don't know if I told you this or not. I've got a couple of them in the can. And if people, you know, go to my website, mentalkeys.com, there's a little link to go to my YouTubes, and I'm kind of explaining this as I go along. And the last one was about the tape. And the one that I'll be doing within the next couple of days is all about outcome versus process goal. And to make it timely, Tiger Woods was one of my favorite models in the past because he was such an example of everything going right in the world of golf.
Mm-hmm.
the last couple of years, he's had a couple of hiccups, and everybody's wondering, is he going to get back up there? And he's been working really hard on his mental game. Matter of fact, people actually working on his mechanics. They're saying he's spending too much time on his mechanics. He should just get back into the game. And you look at his frustrations. He's still playing really well, but you know, he's been throwing clubs, spitting on the green, real bad behavior. And I look, and I said, oh my God, the guy's so consumed, you know, with the outcome. And so I watched him play Sunday, and he made that miracle shot on 16.
Yeah, and you're referring, you know, I'm not sure exactly when this is going to be published, but we're referring to the Memorial Tournament when he made that miracle shot. So it wasn't this, so it was that Sunday.
Yeah.
On the Sunday of the Memorial, we'll say.
Sunday of the Memorial.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, so now, you know, he won. And people say, oh, wow, is he going to come back for the U.S. Open? We're kind of got to get this on the air soon to make it timely. So anyway, I'm looking at right now, who's going to win? Is his tape going to win or is Tiger going to win? That's the only opponent. Because his tape has it where when he is concerned about the outcome, and he misses a shot or two shots, all of a sudden you can see the anger coming in, which takes him out of the process. And so that's what I'm concerned about, or not concerned. I'm going to be watching, you know, during the Open. If he makes a couple bad shots, if his anger comes to the surface and he can't get rid of that in a hurry, he doesn't have a prayer. But if he can overcome and get back into the present, get back into the process, he's got a real good chance of being the old Tiger Woods. And so that's his battle. His battle is going to be with his tape. Is he going to go back to the last two or three years of being angry when he misses? Or he's going to realize, hey, I'm so good if I miss a shot. Who cares?
Well, let's forget about Tiger for a minute, because I think that that's a microcosm of what's going on in general with golfers. And you can have, like Tiger has displayed in the past, the most remarkable mental game and mental toughness that ever has been considered. But what if things are just not, and this is golf, right? What if things are just not going right that day? And as much as you try to slow yourself down, to close your eyes, to take your breath, to visualize, whatever you need to do to get yourself away from that, it continues to happen. And I know this has happened to me. I know this has happened to everybody. How do you work around that?
Okay, you have to understand that the tournament is 4 days. It's not one day.
Well, I'm talking about us. I'm talking about, you know, not the tournament players. I'm talking about the average golfer who is a Golf Smarter listener. Tiger's not listening to this.
Okay.
So, Tiger, you suck. Okay. I know he's not listening.
Fred, you just have to understand that every day stands on its own merits.
Okay.
Why it happens that someday you can get up and that ball, and you have total control over your game, and other days you get up and you can't do anything right.
Exactly.
Okay. Now those days when you can't do anything right, you basically want to cut your losses. You're going to say, this is going to be one of those tough days. All I can do is play one shot at a time and don't get upset with my shots, because if you don't do that, you're going to get really frustrated. You're going to continue to push your chemistry to even lower levels. And you'll, let's just say a golfer who can shoot in the 80s, he's going to get so frustrated, he's going to end up coming and shooting in the hundreds. Whereas if he would have kept his cool, he would have at least have come in at the 90s. And you could say, well, gee, you know, doesn't make any difference. I shot a 90 instead of an 80. Hey, 90 is a lot better than 100. You have to put it into perspective. And you may say, well, and then you start taking a look at your handicap. Your handicap isn't one day. It's all the days added up and
right.
Then divide it.
Right.
And so you have to start realizing, okay, some days if I'm shooting in the 80s, I'm going to shoot 90s and I'll shoot in the 70s and it'll come out in the 80s, or I'll shoot the high 80s and the low 80s. It'll eventually come out to, so I'm shooting 85. You have to get used to what is on your tape and your highs and your lows and play in that area. Otherwise, when you start shooting a high score, you're going to really start getting down on yourself. You lower your chemistry much lower than it could be, and your score is going to be much higher than you could have come in with. Because after all, you know, if you're shooting 85, coming in with an 89 is not 85, but it's a lot better than a 99.
Right. And you also have to accept the fact that golf, you know, for a recreational average golfer, you can have a 10 to 15 stroke swing on any given day. You have to accept that you're not going to get better every single round, don't you?
True. Yeah. You have to understand. Well, this is a great example. Way back when I was younger, I grew up in Baltimore, and Baltimore Orioles used to have great teams at that time.
If you grew up there, how come you call it Baltimore?
I don't know.
Isn't it supposed to be called Balmer?
Balmer. I guess I've been out on the West Coast too long now.
It's Balmer.
Balmer. Well, there was a
Balmer.
You know, for those, you know, for the baseball players, Jim Palmer, he's a Hall of Famer pitcher.
Yep.
And Earl Weaver was his manager at the time. Now, Jim
Brooks Palmer, Robinson was playing third, right?
Yep. And Boog Powell was on first.
And you know why they called him Boog, right?
Why?
Do you not know that story?
No.
I love these asides because I have ADD. But, yeah, when he was growing up, his dad called him a little booger.
Oh, wow.
And so his nickname ended up being Boog.
Boog. That's something.
There's your baseball trivia 101 for the day. Next, I'm sorry,
going back when you were talking about the swings of the highs and the lows of the average golfer.
Right.
Well, here's the Hall of Famer. And he knew that on days when he had his stuff and when he didn't have his stuff. And when Earl Weaver had him penciled in, you're going to be pitching on Sunday. And when Sunday came and he says, oh, I'm not going to have my stuff today, he would say, Earl, take me out. I don't want to pitch. And Earl said, what do you mean? Your schedule. He says, it's going to ruin my stats. He said, I'm not going to pitch. And he used to drive Earl Weaver crazy.
Wow. Well, it was easy to drive Earl Weaver crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, can you imagine? Here was a Hall of Famer that knew that some days he would have it and some days he wouldn't.
That's fascinating.
You know, the average golfer out there come off of it. Some days you're going to have it and some days you're not. But, you know, if you're scheduled to play golf, you know, you can either say, I'm not going to play because I don't have it today, or you go out there and have fun. And come in with the best score you can by at least keeping your emotions in check.
Well, of course. And then, you know, for a baseball player who has a guaranteed contract, and when Palmer was playing, they weren't making $50 million a year. But, you know, guaranteed contract. Coach, I can't pitch today. Take me out. But a golfer, he doesn't play. He doesn't get paid.
Right?
That's right. And even if he does play, he may not get paid. And for the recreational golfer, we're paying to play. So it's hard to say, you know what? I know I've only played five holes, guys, but I don't have it today. I'm leaving, right? Everyone's going to like, what are you, crazy? Then what do? You know you don't have it, but you got to stick it out.
Well, that's when you say, well, let's see how good my mental game is going to be today.
Awesome.
Let's see if I can finish it up being positive on every single shot. Let's start using the four-step routine. Four-step routine, another great thing. Number one, feedback. Number two, relax. Number three, prepare. Number four, instinctive execution. So you're out there playing, you don't have your stuff, you make one bad shot after another. If you're just focusing on the score, the outcome, you're going to become a very miserable, frustrated person and wish you didn't even play that day. But if you're playing using the four-step routine, you're playing one shot at a time. And so what you do, let's say you hit a bad shot. Take a look at that bad shot. Okay, now why was it bad? You take a look at your mechanics. Well, maybe because I was still angry from my last shot. Whatever it was, you say, what could I do better the next time? And then maybe the only thing is I can have a better attitude on my next shot. So you made a decision on the feedback, your attitude with that. Let's have a better attitude. So then you have a chance to relax. You talk to your buddies. What a rotten shot that was. But you know what? I'm going to at least keep my attitude strong. So then... Number that's two is feed relax. Number three is preparation. You're walking to the ball. You're taking a look at the distance, the lie, the club selection, weather conditions, and you say, we got this all squared away. Now, instead of thinking about how bad the day is going, let's just say, you know what? I can take the attitude glass full or glass half full or glass half empty. And right now, my attitude is the glass is half empty because every shot has been bad. So why don't we change your attitude? And see what's going to happen. Let's just say, hey, I don't care what's going to happen. I'm just going to have a good attitude. I'm going to step up there, hit that ball, and see what happens with a good attitude. And so you get up there, hit the ball, and guess what? You're going to find out you're going to have more good shots having a good attitude than when you have a bad attitude. And then, you know, so you get your number four, you have your instant execution. And then you go back up to number one, feedback. Okay, What was the feedback? You take a look. What was my attitude on that shot? Well, it was better, but it wasn't really good. So you do the whole process again. On my next shot, I'm going to make sure my attitude is good. So all of a sudden, you're not worrying about the score. You're worrying. You're focusing on improving your attitude. So by the end of the day, you've had all of those opportunities to improve your attitude. And if you walk off with a bad score and a good attitude, guess what? You won that day.
Yeah, yeah. And listen, if you're not scoring well, your attitude's going to go down. So stop looking at your scorecard, damn it.
Yeah, and just start focusing on changing your chemistry. And you'll find out that, wow, all of a sudden things worked out well. Here's another thing that's an interesting phenomenon. The guys on tour, they're very good players. If you look historically, if a person comes out of the gate and he shoots in the low 60s, 61, 62, 63, wow. You know what the odds are that he's going to not break 70 the next day?
Oh, is that true? The odds are against him to have another good
almost
round?
80%.
Wow.
I don't know if that's it, but almost 80% of the time they're going to shoot in the 70s.
Is that right?
Yeah. Check it out. It was almost floored me when I saw it. And the reason why is
why is that?
It's amazing because they get so involved. Oh, my God, I shot a great score because if I could do that the next day, I'm going to win this thing. So they go from process-oriented to total outcome-oriented. Mm. And guess what happens after they make one or two bad shots the next day? Their attitude goes down.
Right.
Score goes up.
But these guys have confidence in themselves, and confidence is so key as well. But attitude can really shake that up.
Sure. Mm-hmm. And what happens is people say, what comes first, confidence or success? Hmm. Confidence always comes first. Because if you're depending upon your success, you're depending upon the outside world to create your confidence. Now, what happens if all of a sudden you get a couple bad breaks? Uh-oh, where's your success disappears, your confidence disappears, round robin down. Whereas if you have an attitude, I don't care what the outside world is, I am the man. Nothing's going to shake me because I know it's just a matter of time till I can turn my game around. It's a whole different world. You're not concerned about the outcome. You know that you're good, and it's just a matter of time for the probabilities to come into line. Because while you're keeping that attitude, you're keeping your chemistry high, increasing your probability of success because your performance is going to be higher.
Right.
Now, you know, some of these great players, like I forget who it was, a basketball player. And, you know, he said, when you go 0 for 12 shooting, he said, what do you think? He said, well, I think the average is going to come on my side, so I feel real good about that. And then he said, well, what if you go for 12 for 12? He said, what do you think then? He said, well, I think it's my day. And my attitude gets higher. He said, no matter what happens, my attitude is always there.
Early on in the life of Golf Smarter, I had an opportunity to go play at a tournament where there were a lot of former NBA players. And I was walking around with my microphone, and I remember asking them, you know, and talking about, you know, a mental approach or, you know, having a good, strong mental approach to it. And I have found that professional athletes are like, what do you mean mental game? You know, it's like, I don't think that I'm going to lose or do poorly ever. I'm always going to go right out at it and give it my all every single time. I'm not going to like, should I lay up on this one? I'm going for it. I'm always going for it.
That makes me laugh. You talk about, you know what, the mental game. Mr. October, baseball player. Who was that?
Reggie Jackson.
Okay.
1977, three home runs, three pitches.
Okay. This was back in the
Yankee
early
Stadium.
80s when I first started working using the mental training program, you know, the thing that I work with about the chemistry of the brain. And back in the early 80s, people didn't even know about the chemistry of the brain. It was just like you're the man from the moon.
Right.
So I'm down at Palm Springs. I'm doing some work with some golfers down there. And I think it was he was playing with, what, the Giants or Dodgers?
Who, Reggie Jackson?
Yeah.
In the, he went from, in the 80s, he was at the Angels by that point, I think. He went from the Oakland A's to the Yankees, and I think it was the Angels.
Okay, so anyway, their team is down Palm Springs, you know.
I think that was the Angels.
Spring training. So I get along the fence, and he's out there in the outfield, and this is Reggie Jackson. I says, you know, this guy was having a little slump or something like that. And I said, I'm going to call him over, you know, pump him up and, you know, try to go on his coattails. So I call him over, Reggie, come here. Sure enough, he comes running over to me. He says, what's up? I says, hey, I do mental training. He said, mental training? He got so mad at me. He says, you go to those young kids. You don't come to me with that. He was insulted when I said that.
Yeah, he had a way. When he was in uniform, he was not the friendliest person in the world.
but it was amazing that I had so much confidence in myself. I said, come in here. He came over.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Well, Michael, listen, could we do another recording, another interview for Golf Smarter members? Because, you know, this is why it was so easy for us to do 56 weeks in a row of episodes, because I could talk about swing mechanics, you know, only so much.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and I'd seem to, but I can talk about the mental game a lot. And I think it's so, so important for the average golfer who doesn't have the time or the commitment to practice as much as they want. But I really think that the mental game is so important. Could you come back and we do a Golf Smarter for Members Only?
I'd be happy to come back on one condition.
Okay.
I can plug www.mentalkeys.com.
No, sorry, you can't do that. Also, Michael has just the two books, Mental Golf Tips and The Mental Keys to Improve Your Golf. Both of those are available at golfsmarter.com in our Golfer Smart, our book section there. There's a lot of books on mental game from authors that we've and instructors that we've had on the show in the past, but you should definitely, Michael's books are not difficult to get through. They're not thick, but they resonate very deeply with every person who's ever read it, as his stories testify. I have a lot more questions for you. And it's interesting because of all the time we've talked, new stuff keeps coming up. And that's what I love about having conversations with you. And I want to talk about personality types with you and how that affects it as well. So let's schedule something, and we'll just, as far as the listener's concerned, you're going to be back on the next episode, Golf Smarter for Members Only. And if you're not a member, you're not going to hear it. So please join today. Michael, thanks so much.
My pleasure, Fred.
While recently on vacation in British Columbia, Canada, I realized that one of the biggest contributing factors to slow play are those scavengers who slowly stroll down the edge of every fairway as they scour the water and the rough for lost balls, not even their own. Really? Okay, so you may gain back the $5 that you lost in today's round, but are those used balls going to contribute to your scoring? If you insist on shopping for leftovers, could you please do that when you're not playing golf? Golf Smarter ambassadors, hear my plea. It's time to spend less time searching for balls and more time fixing greens. Everyone will benefit. It's only been a few weeks, but demand for our new Golf Smarter divot repair tool has been tremendous. Because so many of you have been ordering more than one, here's what I'd like to offer. Order 5 Switchblade Divot Repair Tools with the removable Golf Smarter ball marker, and I'll throw in a 6th one for free. And if you're a member in Order 5, I'll send you 7 to share with your 2 favorite foursomes. It's the greatest divot repair tool ever made! Plus, it allows you to share stories and tips from your favorite golf podcast. Order yours right now at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.